Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Deborah Becker. Well, tomorrow is Thanksgiving, a holiday where many of us will sit down with our families and reflect on our blessings. In a moment, we're going to talk about how to navigate some of the divisions among families after the bitter presidential election. But first, we want to look at the history of the holiday, which has some divisions of its own. For example, every Thanksgiving Day since 1970, a group of Native Americans gathers in Plymouth, Mass. To mark what they call a National Day of Mourning. Ramona Peters is the Tribal Historic Preservation Officer for the Mashpee Wampanoag Tribe.
Once you focus on the history and if you know it, there's a lot of grief and mourning for our losses of our people, our land, our clean water, oceans. There's a lot of things that we've lost, continue to lose.
The history of Thanksgiving and how it's celebrated is the subject of a new book by Melanie Kirkpatrick. It's called Thanksgiving, the Holiday at the Heart of the American Experience. Melanie is a senior fellow at the Hudson Institute, and she joins us now from New York. Welcome.
It's good to be with you, and happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving. Happy day before, anyway. Let's listen to a little bit more of Ramona Peters, who's the preservation officer for the Mashpee Wampanoag Tribe, because I want to talk about this National Day of Mourning. She told us how she is celebrating the holiday with thanks and with gratefulness, despite her mixed emotions. Let's listen.
I know when in my warrior days of young adulthood, I was angry and confused about why our ancestors did that. It was a big mistake, and it impacted all tribes across the country and the Pacific Rim, everywhere. I was angry and confused and embarrassed about my ancestors, and it was totally wrong. As I grew older, and I realized that we should never be ashamed of being friendly and hospitable. Sure, I mean, I've been quoted as saying we could have wiped them out on the beach, but I don't feel that way anymore.
Melanie Kirkpatrick, who has just written about the history of Thanksgiving and this complex relationship that Native Americans have with Thanksgiving, tell us a little bit more about that.
I think that Ramona's trajectory is similar to that of other Native Americans I've interviewed. And the Day of Mourning protests that have been taking place in Plymouth for a number of years now really are an exception to the way many Native Americans approach Thanksgiving. The chief of Ramona's tribe, the Wampanoag Nation, wrote a few years ago that the holiday is complicated for many Native Americans, and I think that's right. At that moment in time, in the autumn of 1621, when the Wampanoan warriors, 90 of them, sat down for 3 days and feasted with 53 pilgrims, at that moment in time, it really was a moment of amity, of friendship, of fellowship, and having a good time. Of course, we all know that as the decades went on, we all know the tragedy that befell the Native American peoples of New England. But in 1621, it was a different story, and I like to think that it pointed the way to the diverse people we've become.
You know, you talk in the book about the picture, the painting of the Pilgrim's Feast with the Wampanoags in 1621. Many of us might know of that painting, obviously, because we're not too far from Plymouth. Can you tell us about some of the discrepancies that you found?
Sure.
In reality and what was painted?
Yeah. Well, the difference between the reality and what is actually in that painting and in other depictions of Thanksgiving is something that a lot of Native Americans, not just the extremists, are worried about. So, for example, you see in that picture the Native Americans wearing Indian feather headdresses that were not worn by the Native American peoples in New England, but were probably inspired by the Plains Indians, which the artist was more aware of. So, too, you find a lot of concern among Native Americans about the way their culture is presented in elementary school texts, and which influences how kids then grow up to think about Native Americans. And I have a great deal of empathy for that. For example, the wearing of feathers, again, it's a solemn ritual for Native Americans. They have significant symbolic and spiritual meaning. So to see kids running around in Indian headdresses is offensive, or at least concerning to many people. Though, of course, on the other hand, I guess you could say the kids who run around wearing buckles on their hats, which the pilgrims didn't wear, and then aren't given an opportunity to show how the pilgrims practiced their religion, that could be disturbing as well.
You know, in your book, you also talk about the dispute over who really may have had the first Thanksgiving. Now, we may get in big trouble for this controversial topic here in Massachusetts on the day.
Especially your listeners in Massachusetts, Deborah.
Absolutely.
So. Oh, this was a really fun chapter to research. Mm. It's about the competitors to the title of First Thanksgiving. Mm. There are and this means the Europeans who came to this continent and gave thanks before the pilgrims. There are a couple of candidates in Texas, and Texas actually in the 1990s, I think it was, the governor of Texas, Ann Richards, issued a proclamation saying that a date in April was actually the date of the first Thanksgiving in the United States, and challenged the governor of Massachusetts to accept her analysis. And then there are a couple in Florida as well, predominantly the area on the James River near Jacksonville. There's also one in Maine. And then my favorite, I think, or at least my favorite story, is the one about the Berkeley Plantation on the James River in
Virginia.
Virginia, that's right. And when President Kennedy issued a Thanksgiving proclamation in 1962, referring to the first Thanksgiving as having taken place in Massachusetts, a Virginia state senator wrote to him complaining that he got it wrong. And the state senator received a reply from none other than Arthur Schlesinger, Jr., the great historian who at the time was an aide to Kennedy, apologizing for the New England bias of the White House and promising it wouldn't happen again. Sure enough, in 1963, the Kennedy's Thanksgiving proclamation mentioned Virginia first and then Massachusetts.
But included both.
That's
and didn't
right.
necessarily give Virginia all the credit, isn't that right?
That's right. You're sticking up for your state.
I also want to talk a little bit about the woman that you write about in the book, Thanksgiving's godmother, Sarah Hale. Can you remind us about her?
Sarah Josepha Hale is my favorite character in the book. She was a magazine editor in the 19th century who was devoted to things American, and particularly Thanksgiving. She used the pages of her magazine, Godey's Ladies Book, which was the most popular magazine of the Civil War era, by the way, it had a national circulation, and she used the pages of the book to promote her idea of a national Thanksgiving. Almost every state and territory had a Thanksgiving, but the governors didn't coordinate so that Thanksgivings were being celebrated across the country, you know, between the end of September and the beginning of December. And she was also an ardent abolitionist, and she believed that the American people could come together if they worshipped and celebrated on the same day. So in addition to using the pages of her magazine to promote this idea, she also wrote letters to public figures. Every president of the United States since the 1840s, and governors and other public figures. And finally, in 1863, in the middle of the Civil War, probably the bloodiest year in American history, President Lincoln heeded her call and decided to have a national Thanksgiving, calling on all Americans, North and South, to look forward to peace and to celebrate the blessings of the country.
Mm. Which was really at the heart of a lot of this. The states, you know, the different celebrations, even the very early ones, it seems it was always a time where folks stopped to be grateful and to reflect on what they had. I want to go back now to our conversation for a moment with Ramona Peters, the Tribal Historic Preservation Officer for the Mashpee Wampanoag Tribe, because she mentioned that unity that the country needed after the Civil War and how the Thanksgiving holiday helped achieve it. Let's listen.
I'm very proud that this country celebrates Thanksgiving. It's a very good thing. I think it is important at times like this right now for us to really look at what we have and the luxury and the life that we live, especially when we begin to have fears of the future, to really look at what we have and experience that gratitude. I think it's good medicine for us.
Melanie Kirkpatrick, after hearing that, after learning the history of this holiday for you to write this new book about Thanksgiving, how are you feeling about tomorrow?
I am feeling that it is a moment for us, for me personally, but also for, I hope, the country, to come together. It's a healing moment. And it's time, as Ramona said, to think about our blessings, and I would say after this fractious political season with its ugly discourse, I think it's a time for us to focus on what unites us as Americans, not what divides us.
All right. Well, Melanie Kirkpatrick, Senior Fellow at the Hudson Institute, author of the new book, Thanksgiving, The Holiday at the Heart of the American Experience. Melanie, thanks so much for being with us, and happy Thanksgiving.
Same to you, Deb.
Stay with us. Coming up is politics tearing apart your Thanksgiving plans. We'll talk with some folks who can offer advice. I'm Deborah Becker. This is Radio Boston.